From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Golhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Bernie Sanders, the independent senator from Vermont who ran twice for president under the Democratic Party, ended his historic campaign this week, citing the insurmountable delegate lead racked up by his rival, former Vice President Joe Biden. Sanders spoke of unity and reminded his supporters that the movement behind his campaign was not over. Still, many worry that with a choice between President Donald Trump and Biden this November, the incumbent is more likely to win re-election. And while the end of Sanders' campaign is a massive blow to progressives all over the nation, are we to give up on our dreams of redesigning the government, economy, and society to benefit the 99%? Joining me to help answer that question is Micah Utrecht. He is managing editor of Jacobin Magazine and the host of the Jacobin Radio podcast, The Vast Majority. He's written for The Guardian, The Intercept, The Nation, Book Forum, and more. He's the author of Strike for America, Chicago Teachers Against Austerity. He's a former labor organizer and a member of the Democratic Socialists of America in Chicago. His new book, co-written with Megan Day, is called Bigger Than Bernie, How We Go From the Sanders Campaign to Democratic Socialism. He volunteered for Sanders' campaign and canvassed for him in numerous states. Welcome to the program, Micah.
Thanks for having me.
So we shouldn't have been surprised that Sanders did announce the end of his candidacy, but there were still so many progressives who wished he had stayed longer. And he referred to that during his speech. Were you surprised?
Was I surprised? I mean, it's Bernie Sanders, his entire career, what has been so distinctive about him is that he has largely eschewed advice from anyone going one way or the other, and he ends up being the decider on how he's going to run his political career. So, I mean, I was a bit surprised, but I also don't think it's surprising that when he made up his mind about what he was going to do, that's what he was going to do. And he would ignore left activists like me who were arguing that he should stay in the race. But I think that what's far bigger and more important than how long he stayed in the race is the fact that his campaign will have this long-lasting transformative effect on American politics that will last long beyond his two campaigns and into the years and decades into the future.
And that is, of course, the topic of our conversation. But before we do that, let's actually watch a short excerpt of his speech that he gave on Wednesday, the day that he announced the end of his candidacy.
I know that there may be some in our movement who disagree with this decision, who would like us to fight on to the last ballot cast at the Democratic Convention. I understand that position. But as I see the crisis gripping the nation, exacerbated by a president unwilling or unable to provide any kind of credible leadership, and the work that needs to be done to protect people in this most desperate hour, I cannot in good conscience continue to mount a campaign that cannot win and which would interfere with the important work required of all of us in this difficult hour. While Vice President Biden will be the nominee, we must continue working to assemble as many delegates as possible at the Democratic Convention, where we will be able to exert significant influence over the party platform and other functions. Then together, standing united, we will go forward to defeat Donald Trump, the most dangerous president in modern American history. And please stay in this fight with me. Let us go forward together. The struggle continues. Thank you all very much.
And that's Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, short excerpts of the speech that he gave on Wednesday as he ended his second bid for the presidency. One of the things that he cited, Micah, is that the moment that we're in at this time with this pandemic that we're living through, he felt that the campaign would have interfered with the important work that needs to be done in this time. Just briefly looking back on what happened and how it all changed, many of us remember the moment when the Democratic Party establishment coalesced behind Joe Biden and changed his fortune. But it also happened around the same time as the coronavirus pandemic, precisely that moment when Sanders's policy and his platform was more relevant than ever. Did the coronavirus kill his candidacy rather than giving it new life as I expected it might?
Well, it's hard to parse exactly what the lessons from that are, since none of us have ever lived through anything quite like this before. I mean, certainly the lifeblood of the Bernie Sanders campaign was his being out on the campaign trail, doing mass rallies with thousands of people all over the country. And all of that was off the agenda with the onset of the coronavirus. And it's not like Bernie Sanders was getting a fair say from mainstream media beforehand, but certainly with the onset of the coronavirus pandemic, that is all that is being talked about right now. And so it's hard, especially as we're still in the middle of it, it's hard to know how much weight we should give to the pandemic, how much weight should we give to the fact that the establishment, the Democratic establishment, along with the mainstream media, all coalesced around Joe Biden to try to destroy Bernie's candidacy. And it seemed like that worked. On the other hand, we have seen polls that showed, I mean, even before the coronavirus pandemic, there were numerous polls that showed the majority of Americans supported a Medicare for All system, which is, of course, Bernie Sanders' signature platform, a signature policy proposal in his platform. And with the onset of the pandemic, there are new polls that show even more support for such policies. So even with him out of the race, you're seeing the impact that he has had on American politics and the way that Americans are coming together around his signature policy proposals, even if he's not going to be in the race anymore.
Well, the slogan of his campaign, "Not Me, Us," seems to be a really good jumping off point for where we go from here. Your book is called Bigger Than Bernie, How We Go From the Sanders Campaign to Democratic Socialism. How historic a coalition did the campaign help to build and bring together? Have we seen anything like this in American history?
I don't think we ever have. And it's important to remember right now where this country was 5 years ago, four years ago, right before Bernie began running for the president the first time. There was no, the labor movement was basically decimated. There was no, socialism was still an anathema word, a word that would get you laughed out of the room in polite political circles. And there was certainly no activated and cohering coalition on the left among progressives that were fighting for the kinds of things that Bernie's talking about, Medicare for All, Green New Deal, and all the rest of it. All of that has come together in an incredibly short amount of time, in the span of 4 or 5 years. And it has come together around a campaign for a candidate who, as you said, is making the basic argument of "not me, us." And that sets him apart from every other candidate, certainly, a candidate like Elizabeth Warren, or even most of the other progressive candidates you've seen in recent decades in American politics. It's not like there was a kind of a typical candidate was here on the leftward, on the left of center on the political spectrum, and Bernie was just a little bit further to the left. I mean, Bernie was talking about doing politics in a totally different way than we are used to hearing. I don't know, when was the last time we heard such politics being argued for? Eugene Debs, a century ago. So it was a very qualitatively different way of doing politics. And there are millions of people who have heard that message and are running with it, whether it's through organizations like the Sunrise Movement, which is arguing for a Green New Deal, or the Democratic Socialists of America, which I am a member of, that exploded. It was basically reborn, and the American Socialist Movement was reborn after his first campaign. There are huge numbers of people all around the country who are taking that message very seriously. And I think that in addition to all of the new left elected officials like Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez or Ilhan Omar or the socialist elected officials on the local level, I think it's those huge numbers, thousands, maybe tens of thousands, maybe even hundreds of thousands of people who have been shown that a different way of doing politics is possible. Bottom up grassroots left wing movement politics is possible. And that is what's going to transform this country's politics going forward.
So there are those who say that, it looks like that progressive majority that Sanders relied on to catapult his campaign into reality simply doesn't exist. What do you make of that? It seems to me that there may still be a progressive majority, just a big enough fraction of that progressive majority was swayed by the corporate media and moved to behave as political pundits in trying to pick somebody electable rather than somebody they actually believed in. But maybe that's just wishful thinking on my part.
Yeah, no, I think you're correct. Although I think that it's always true that those progressive majorities don't exist, you know, organically. You have to create them. You have to bring them together and cohere them. I think that there are huge numbers of Americans who, as I mentioned before, support policies like Medicare for All and support many of the other policies that Bernie pushed for, like free college for all. And the job of his campaign was to bring those forces, millions of people around the country together, you know, along with, you know, the organized sections of the progressive movement, the labor movement, the environmental movement, the feminist and anti-racist movement, all the rest of it. And he was beginning to do that, and he made incredible strides in a very short period of time. I mean, again, to just zoom out and remember where we were 5 years ago when none of these forces were existing as a kind of coherent block in society, in American society. His campaign has put us on the road towards building those kinds of progressive majorities. He said on Wednesday that in his speech announcing the suspension of his campaign that he was going that his campaign had won the ideological battle. And I think that's true. And that's the first step towards being able to actually cohere those progressive majorities, working class majorities, and all the other constituencies that make up the left-wing voting block, a potential left-wing voting block. Those constituencies are starting to cohere around his campaign, and the test going forward will be whether or not we're able to continue building that coalition to support whoever the next standard bearer for 21st century left-wing politics is, whether that's a President Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez in 2024 or 2028 or whoever it ends up being. That'll be the key going forward.
Of course, much is at stake in the immediate short term. We have a general election coming up just months from now, and an incumbent president who we know is willing to go to any lengths to remain in power. Facing him is Joe Biden, who in a statement, on the day that Sanders ended his campaign, said, "Bernie has done something rare in politics. He hasn't just run a political campaign. He's created a movement, and make no mistake about it, I believe it's a movement that is as powerful today as it was yesterday. That's a good thing for our nation and our future." And so he went on from there in some very nice sounding rhetoric. And yet Biden continues to maintain, in the midst of this insane historic pandemic that we're in, that he would veto a Medicare for All bill if by some miracle it passed Congress and reached his desk as president. Is he just paying lip service to Sanders' supporters?
I think that Biden clearly learned something from the 2016 campaign, which was that Hillary Clinton's continued intransigence towards Bernie and towards Bernie's supporters, despite the fact that Bernie showed that he had millions or tens of millions of people behind his agenda, that's not a path forward for electoral success. So we're at least making some baby steps in that Biden feels the need to toss some rhetorical bones to the Sanders movement in 2020.
Right. Hillary Clinton, I don't think, did anything like that. And in fact, years later, continues to blame Sanders and Sanders alone for her loss.
Right. Like up to this day, she's continuing that campaign. So Biden at least is not doing that. But yet he is, as you mentioned, rejecting Bernie's signature policy proposal, which is a Medicare for All system, a policy proposal which, by the way, has been shown to be absolutely dire, especially right now when we're in the midst of the coronavirus pandemic and the economic downturn that is leading to projections to up to 30% or more unemployment, which means that when your health insurance is tied to your employment, I mean, what is the 30% of the population going to do in that case? So it's clear that the bones that Biden is willing to toss rhetorically to Bernie and to his movement are not enough going forward. There's going to have to be a substantive shift, especially on the issue of Medicare for All, from Joe Biden. It's doubtful whether or not that's going to happen. We know the kind of cozy relationship that Biden has with a lot of corporate interests, including corporate healthcare interests. But that is the most urgent issue policy-wise going forward in the midst of the coronavirus pandemic. And I think that Sanders supporters are not stupid. They are not going to be satisfied with a couple nods to them here and there. They're going to have to see some real movement from Biden on Medicare for All specifically.
In his letter, he did address a few issues specifically, but again, this sounds like lip service if you actually parse what he said. Let me read it out. Biden said, "We will address the existential crisis of climate change." He didn't say we'll actually try to end climate change. We will address it. "We will confront income inequality in the nation." Again, he refused to say he would actually take steps to end it, simply confront it. "We will make sure healthcare is affordable and accessible to every American." Affordable and accessible, except we've got millions and millions of unemployed people today. He says, "We will make our," this is the only part where he actually said something specific, "we will make our make education at our public colleges and universities free." This, I thought, was the only place where he actually said something positive and progressive. "We will ease the burden of student debt, not end student debt or forgive student debt." So in the only, you know, one out of sort of several, a handful of policy, critical policy issues, it was vague. It was the kind of thing that a politician is, you know, is known for saying, because if you go to try to hold him accountable, he can turn back and claim plausible deniability, never actually promise to do anything about any of these issues. So what do you think this movement that Sanders, this campaign helped to coalesce? He didn't create the campaign. He helped, the movement, he helped to coalesce it. What is the path forward? There are a number of progressive groups that have written a letter back to Biden addressing specifically what they want from Biden. Is that the step to take?
Well, I don't think that is a bad step to take forward. I do think that there will need to be a level of, a willingness to fight Joe Biden, because if you look at the scope of Biden's career, I mean, this is not the first election that Biden has run in. He's been involved in electoral politics for four decades now, and his instinct has always been to, especially when the right wing puts forward challenge to him, to try to head them off at the pass by moving rightward himself. And so right now he may be feeling the heat because we're, you know, at the tail end of the primary in which he was up against Bernie. But as soon as he starts actually having to fight against Trump, I think we'll probably see his old political instinct of tacking rightward come back. And so the only way to prevent him from doing that, I mean, that the letter that you referenced from those movement groups is talking about who's going to be in his very, you know, his cabinet and staffing his various agencies, all important stuff. But I think that those movements will have to see Biden as fundamentally someone who they're going to need to go to battle with in order to wring any kind of concessions out of him. And I think that the work of a group like the Democratic Socialists of America, that's not going to be endorsing Joe Biden and that sees him, you know, that is unafraid to talk about him as a kind of fundamentally capitalist politician who has not been on the side of working people his entire life. I mean, I think that kind of approach towards fighting him will be necessary if we're going to get anything out of him going forward, assuming he can even defeat Donald Trump, which is something that I am particularly worried about come November.
Right. So there's the big question. Can he defeat Trump? He is ahead in national polls, but in swing states, the races are tight. This is what happened with Clinton. Of course, with Clinton, in fact, polls showed her ahead in swing states. And then on election night, she lost in those key critical swing states. If they're already tight going into the election in swing states, there is great fear that Biden could lose this election. And, you know, at stake are things like the Supreme Court and justices. You know, there's at least one or two justices that are on the verge of retiring. And yet there are a number of progressives who say and who backed Sanders's campaign, I'm seeing this, you know, anecdotally, say on my Facebook feed, I will never vote for Biden. There's others who saying, do not ask us to vote for somebody who has been accused of sexually assaulting a woman. You know that these are issues that are going to be raised during the general election. The right-wing media is going to attack Biden in very, very strong ways. They're not going to hold back. What do you suggest in terms of just the act of voting, which should not be mistaken with movement politics, but in terms of the act of voting this November, are you hoping that we first defeat Donald Trump and then push Biden to the left? Or are you not wanting to take a position on voting for Biden at all?
Well, of course, anybody who, you know, has half a brain cell did not want to see Donald Trump reelected to the presidency. And if I live in Illinois, a solidly blue state, but if I lived in a swing state, I would have, of course, vote for Joe Biden over Donald Trump. The problem is that when you have a candidate like Biden, who has the kind of record that you mentioned, everything ranging from credible accusations of sexual assault to a lockstep career in line with what corporate America wants, you can't just browbeat people into voting for him, especially when those people, you know, young people and all of the others who have gotten excited by the Bernie Sanders campaign have seen for the first time in their lives that there actually is a credible political alternative to the kind of centrist neoliberal democratic politics that Biden represents. And so, I would urge people to vote Biden to prevent them from voting for Donald Trump and prevent the reelection of Donald Trump. But I don't think you can just sort of yell at people and force them into doing that. I mean, there are real reasons to be very reticent towards Joe Biden. And so that's the real issue going forward, not to mention all of the, you know, the gloves have not come off during this this primary race. We haven't seen that many attacks on, allegations of corruption among Joe Biden and his family. And the elephant in the room for everyone who watches a Joe Biden speech, which is that it does seem like he is in some level of cognitive decline. Donald Trump is going to be tweeting about such things by the hour when it comes time for the general election. So I'm very worried about those prospects going forward. Of course, I want to see Trump defeated, but the Democratic establishment and mainstream media may have stuck us with a candidate who might be incapable of doing that.
Well, finally, isn't it true that there is generally more space to make more progress on left issues under Democratic presidents than there is under Republican presidents? It seems as though during Republican presidential years, the left is constantly playing defense, whereas under Democratic presidents, there's at least the potential to play offense, whether or not left movements actually rise to the challenge, which, you know, under Obama, some didn't and some did.
Yes, I think that is true. The problem is that is not an argument that will have mass purchase and will lead to, you know, tens of millions of people deciding to vote for Joe Biden on that basis. I don't think in the general election that is going to be an argument that will sway people. I mean, we saw in 2016 how people, the country would have been much better off if Hillary Clinton were the president of the United States, but that people didn't, average voters didn't parse things that fine in such a fine-grained way. They just thought that, oh, Hillary Clinton is more of the establishment and Donald Trump is not. The reality is more complicated, but for the average voter, I think that is where they're going to go with that kind of choice. So yes, of course, we on the left would be better off under a Biden presidency because we can have a fuller conversation about the full inadequacies of the Democratic Party rather than watching whatever grotesqueries that Trump is sailing across our television every day. But I don't think that is an argument that will actually win an election for a Democratic politician. People are hungry for some kind of break from the status quo. Bernie Sanders represented that in this election, and Joe Biden does not.
Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us today, Micah. We shall see how things play out over the next several months. Appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me.
My guest is Micah Utrecht, managing editor of Jacobin Magazine. His new book, co-written with Megan Day, is called Bigger Than Bernie, How We Go From the Sanders Campaign to Democratic Socialism. He volunteered for Sanders' campaign and canvassed for him in numerous states. We've been discussing the legacy of Sanders' candidacy and where the movement goes from here. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify.